puts the Hurt on top. 70-69, 19 seconds left in the contest.
The worldwide leader in Marshall University sports coverage, the Cutting Edge Sports Radio Network.
Oh, Daddy, can I really...
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the known world listening to this live or on podcast. We'd like to thank you for joining us for another edition of Brother to Brother with Dr. Nate Chapman and Dr. Keelan Hinton. And we are here for all of your mental health, community, love, relationship, pop culture, and everything needs in between. For those that would like to participate in the show, you can contact us at B2B Psych. That's B, the number 2, B, Psych, P-S-Y-C-H, B2B Psych, at gmail.com. As we always say, we'd like to thank Marshall University as well as WMUL 88.1 FM for providing us this platform to talk about mental health issues. But as we always say, any of the comments, suggestions, ideas, or perspectives that you hear on this show for the next hour are not represented by Marshall University, are not represented by WMUL, any of their sponsors, affiliates, or supporters. But these are the sole perspectives and ideas of myself, Dr. Hinton, as well as Dr. Chapman, and any of the guests that are here, as well as any of the perspectives that you hear. These are our personal perspectives and ideas. They do not represent the university or any of the entities that we work for or help. So, as we always say, while this may be therapeutic, Dr. Chapman loves to remind us that this is not what?
Now, this is radio time. This is our man cave. This is where we just have conversations.
All right. So this is just a place that we have conversations. We are not billing you for this. So take this advice, as we say, at your own risk. So again, as we always say, we always like to say, we would love to thank the people who continue to support the show, who continue to send in ideas, suggestions for panels, for book writers. Keep the suggestions coming. Again, we thank you for your support, and we welcome the questions. So without further ado, we won't hold you long. Again, we are continuing our series on greatness. And again, we will not fail you once again tonight. We have an amazing speaker who's going to give us an amazing perspective, give us his perspective, and talk a little bit about his journey, talk about his perspective and idea on greatness, and some of the components that played an important part to him, and maybe he'll give a little advice to the audience as well. But as always, we always like to do a little wellness check-in to see how everybody's doing. My brothers, how are you doing? Dr. Chapman, Mr. Blanco, how are you doing today?
Doing well.
I'm doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing well. Hey, I'm better than I deserve. I won't complain. Right. I won't complain.
We all.
Yeah. Dr. Chapman loves to brag to us all about how he lives in sunny California. Has it rained yet? Have you seen any clouds in the sky, Dr. Chapman?
No, but it is getting a little bit chilly. You know, it's a little bit chilly.
Oh.
A little chill in the air.
We understand.
Oh, you better bundle up. That's a hard knock life you got going on there, Dr. Chapman.
Hard knock. Yes.
Yeah. He lets us know that it's a sacrifice. You know, it's a sacrifice, but someone has to do it, and he is the guy to do it. So somebody has to do it.
Sweet of him to volunteer.
It is. Well, we're going to rock and roll. No further ado. We're going to have a great evening for you. Again, I'll throw it to Dr. Chapman. He will introduce our guests, and we will rock and roll.
All right, so as you know, if you've been following for, I guess, the last month or so, we were on a series of talking about greatness. So we've been talking about greatness overall, trying to find out what we think the ingredients for greatness are. So what we decided to do was bring in guests from various backgrounds that we think are either on their road to greatness or that have accomplished some great things, have a conversation about their path, how they came to be where they're at, and then try to pick their brain about what their ingredients is. And then when we get done with all our speakers, we'll go ahead and dissect what parts we picked up and what we think might be a good ingredient for you to follow. So we got our esteemed guest today, Major Michael Blanco, retired, decorated senior military operation officer with 18 years of professional and military experience. He's served in many different capacities, notable at the 82nd Airborne Division, where he led in a leadership capacity. He'll be able to tell you more about that. Currently, he works consulting for various organizations and helping with business development, change management, organizational leadership, bringing to bear all of the years of experience he's had. And so we're going to just have a conversation. We're gonna pick the retired major's brain today and see.
There's not a lot left. The Army got most of it before I got out. Sorry to disappoint you.
Okay, great. So why don't we just start with your story. If you could tell us how you got to where you are now with whatever you'd like to share. So tell us about your journey and where you are.
Absolutely. So mine is a strange story. And I think most, I like my story, you know, it's unique to me. So I started off life, you know, living in Miami, Florida. I was a very lazy, apathetic, non-athletic kid that just wanted to sit home, eat pizza, play video games, played sports one season, played soccer. You know, I just wasn't about that life. I didn't, from an early age, really lacked a specific type of work ethic at all. You know what I mean? Not a great student in middle school, not a great student in high school. Gained a lot of weight. I was a chubby kid well into my early to mid 20s because I just lacked a whole lot of discipline. Graduated from college by the skin of my teeth with my bachelor's. I currently hold a master's degree and I'm working toward my master's in business analytics. But I really didn't see a path for me in this world. And it wasn't until, you know, I really fell into finance that I really started to find my groove. And I realized that, you know, hard work is indeed hard. But the harder you work, the more it pays off. And today, what we like to talk about is everybody likes, you know, the big buzzword now is work-life balance, right? I've come to believe it's a work-life choice, right? So at some points in your life, you will choose work. At some points in your life, you will choose, like, you know, life, right? And balance and family and things like that. This isn't a perfect equilibrium that we live in our daily lives. Sometimes you're going to have to grind it out more. Sometimes you're going to have to grind it out less, depending on what plateau or where you want to go. It's easy for CEOs and people I've worked with to sit there and say, you know what, Mike, you need a work-life balance. Well, sir, you've already made it. You've earned your work-life balance, right? Let's have the conversation of, you know, and I hit my age. Did you have a work-life balance? Oh no, it was all work. Well, that's why you might be where you are today, right? So I found that work-life balance, or I found that work ethic within myself when I decided initially to lose 175 pounds.
Wow.
So I was, no joke. Did it without surgery, did it with nothing. My end goal was to dream of joining the United States Army. Since I was a little kid, I had always wanted to join the military. I had gone to college at my parents' behest, you know, that had mixed reviews. Fell into finance, did finance. I was doing pretty well. But I was not happy. I still didn't have that work ethic that I felt I needed, and I was getting older. So from one day to the next, I quit my job, lost 175 pounds, and enlisted in the United States Army, where I was commissioned as a officer in the United States Armor Branch. My first KD position, my first leadership position, was a tank platoon leader. Got to roll around on a bunch of tanks, great time, blow stuff up, good times, you know, hanging out with soldiers. And the microcosm that is the United States military really gave me an interesting perspective on everybody, on different people's journeys in life and where they are in the country. Because what's really brilliant about the military is it is a microcosm of our population. It is as diverse as it can be. You know, I had soldiers under my charge whose parents were multimillionaires who did not want them to join the Army or the military in general, but they did it anyway because they either felt a need to serve, or they felt a desire to go off and prove to themselves who they really were, right? And the same thing holds true of the kids that grew up, you know, blue collar or poor. And they shared the same, you know, the same barracks, chewed the same dirt, ate the same food. So tank platoon leader, mortar platoon leader, deployed to Afghanistan for the first time, to a kinetic deployment there, and returned, hit captain, went to the captain's career course, Did some other TRADOC schools, reconnaissance leaders course, cavalry leaders course. And then I became a commander or a reconnaissance commander at the 82nd Airborne Division, where I would deploy again back to Afghanistan, this time as a commander, handling and managing three different platoons over a broad spectrum of areas of operation. Tragically, later on in my career, I would suffer a couple of injuries due to a parachute malfunction. I made a full recovery, but the effort it took to continue performing at the level that I was performing at prior to just wasn't there. And the thing about soldiers is they deserve, and everybody deserves this, the very best in leadership, right? And the very best in leadership does. They're able to do, and this is especially true of military service, because what was ironically this conversation that we're having on greatness. First, I was very humbled to be asked to even be considered that I might have a grasp of what greatness might be. Colin Powell passed recently, and he was a true hero of mine ever since I was a little boy. His book, My American Journey. I would urge anybody who hasn't read it to read it, because it's an incredible book about what is possible if you have the right mindset, regardless of circumstance. And in his book, he talks about soldiers are easy to lead, even if you don't train them, because they watch what you do and they do what you do. Leaders are always being watched, is what he said. And it's true. And that's how I kind of framed my leadership dynamic as a commander in garrison and in Afghanistan. And it's something I held on to even after I got injured, when people saw me hurt, when they saw me going through the surgeries, when they saw me, doing the rehabilitation. I knew all eyes are on me. So it was imperative to me to show that this is just an obstacle, this is just a challenge that I needed to overcome. So I would eventually separate from the military for medical conditions, obtain my MBA. And the irony is, as soon as I finished all of that, COVID hit. And so there I am, here I am, free into the world, a man in society again, and COVID hits, and man, I need to figure out my place in this world amongst the wasteland of COVID. And so I was fortunate to fall in with a couple of consulting firms. A good friend of mine, Mike Ficarra, who is instrumental to a lot of my success, helped me get on my feet. And initially what I tried to be was, the change management, the organizational leadership guru for small companies. These are small companies, mom and pop, that, 15, 20 employees, $10, $15 million in revenue. We're not talking about the IBMs. We're not talking about, the Microsofts of the world. These are the salt of the earth people that also needed consulting services, that also needed, the same type and quality of consulting that bigger firms get. And so that's what we tried to provide. I did that for about 2 years, and I was fortunate enough to be picked up by one of the largest financial services firm in the country, whom I currently work for and do business development for. So that's my story in a nutshell. So a little bit of a Hemingway story, which is I like to keep it that way. I don't stick around long. Once a shiny object catches my eye, I latch onto it. And I'm always looking for that next, hill on the horizon.
Okay. Very interesting. One thing that comes to mind, I wonder if you'd be willing to share with the listeners. Forgive me as I go through this. I'm experiencing a little bit of tendonitis, like ringing in my ear. So the echo back of my own is making it a little bit challenging, but we'll work through it. Could you talk a little bit about that journey to get fit, to fit your dream, what you think mentally helped you do it?
Man, it is one of the hardest things I have ever done. But what I gained from it essentially was knowing that there would never be anything that I wouldn't be able to accomplish if I really wanted it. Right. When you're a big kid, let's just call it what it is. When you're a fat kid, pretty much your entire life, that is how you essentially identify. Nobody sits there and helps you do it or lose weight. Nobody, everybody just thinks you like food. And in society, especially today, people are like, oh, you should just be happy in your body and things like that. But I was also unhealthy. And as my journey started, it's as if somebody flipped the switch. And I don't know how that switch got flipped, because, like, as I said earlier, I really lacked a lot of work ethic growing up. I wasn't some stellar rock star kid, but this is something I developed in myself over the course of that year and subsequent years in learning discipline. And it was a slow start. It was hard. I remember the first time I ran a mile, it was on a treadmill. It took me 13 minutes, but you would have thought I just won a gold medal. You know, I was so excited. And it was the hardest. I thought they were going to have to call a medic. I didn't think I was going to make it. And that was that, you know, I was a 24, 25 year old, you know, you would think some supposedly healthy kid. And then I would go through my workouts and, you know, you would get the serotonin flowing in the brain, you know, you'd start to feel good about yourself. And then I'd get home and I'd be in the shower, you know, a very, very rocky Ivan Drago moment, you know, sitting there just having nothing but self-doubts. Mike, why are you doing this? You're just a fat kid. You know, you'll never be able to achieve what you're going for. And so more than anybody else that I had to battle was myself. Nobody, you know, people were supportive. People, you know, good for you, Mike, you've lost a few pounds, you know, blah, blah, blah. But the person, the demon I had to battle for me was myself, 100%. And that was the biggest challenge. But once I started to see small successes, those smaller successes, like everything else in life, started to boil over into big successes. And by the time I shipped for basic training, I was 155 pounds. I looked like I was chiseled out of granite. You know, it wasn't like there was question of whether or not I was going to make it. It was how far beyond I was going to be ahead of everybody else. And it sparked in me a competitive nature that I didn't have for whatever reason growing up, that is a huge part of who I am and my personality today. But to answer your question, the hardest part of that journey was arguing with myself, was, you know, taking my own criticism and using it, quite honestly, for good, bad, or indifferent, against myself. I would have, you know, I'd sit there, I was my biggest worst enemy. So I would take those negative thoughts, and for whatever reason, I would transfer them to another part of me, and I would use that as fuel and anger to go back the next day and do what I needed to do, right? To throw away, I would order pizzas, for example. They would be delivered and I'd stare at it, and this probably isn't healthy, but this is what I needed to do at that time to be successful. I would throw it away. I already paid for it. I wouldn't eat it. It was like that movie, what is it, Average Joe's, with the guy and the shocking and the throwing and the pizza and everything else. But you know what? I knew that if I yielded to temptation in that moment, that too would snowball into habits that would be, again, difficult to break. So I was extremely draconian in my training and in my nutrition for about 9 months. And in that 9 months, I lost, you know, to lose 170 plus pounds in 9 to 12 months is no small feat, I can tell you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'll say, do you remember which came first, the want to be, well, did the military start to become, did it start to manifest as a real possibility as you started to lose weight? Like, as you started to lose weight, was you like, man, maybe I can go after this military thing? Is that how Absolutely. It happened for you?
It was. So slowly... slowly I began to realize that this was something I could achieve, and that caused me to work harder. But like everything else, no, there is no straight line to success, right? So ironically enough, you know, just before I'm supposed to ship out for basic training, I blow my knee out and I need ACL surgery, right? So heartbreaking, right? But this happens to people. Life is not fair. It's not meant to be fair. If it were completely fair, we'd learn nothing about ourselves, and we would have no way to build upon, you know, our experiences if life was fair. So I felt it wasn't fair, but it was one of those things where I just sucked it up and did the rehab. During rehab, I tore my replaced ACL because I was so determined to get back to where I was and to where I wanted to be, that when my physical therapist wasn't looking, I turned up the notches on the treadmill and just started booking it way before I was ready to. And the next thing you know, there was a nerve snap. So that added another 5 or 6 months to, you know, my departure date for the military. So those small successes doesn't mean that you're not going to stumble over obstacles or something's going to happen. Really, what matters is your attitude to get back after it, regardless of whatever that consequence was.
Okay.
Yeah, that attitude sounds key. That this sort of you made a decision and you resolve to move towards that decision regardless of whatever might get in your way. The other thing I wonder if you might speak to, because I see it comes into play in those early habits that got you ready for the military, and then knowing how the military works, you probably had it going on while you were in the military. Can you speak to habits and how you believe habits can be helpful for greatness?
Habits are key to, and it's not just having habits, it's doing habits when habits aren't easy. It's moving through with those habits, those things that you're supposed to do, even when you're dead tired. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter. I had a thing when I was in my military, early on in my military career, and it really didn't revolve around the military so much as it did, you know, the state and cleanliness of my own apartment or my own house. The food prepping I would do at 11 o'clock at night after I had been in the field for 2 days, because I wanted to maintain my physical fitness and be competitive as a military officer, because as a military officer, everything is a competition. You are constantly being judged mentally, physically, at all levels. So you need to have almost a professional athlete mentality to be as successful as I wanted to be. Now, clearly, you know, if you don't have ambitions to be something other than, you know, what the rest of the flock is, if you don't want to, you know, ride ahead of the pack, then you don't need to do all of those things. But it's those small habits that keep you disciplined. So prepping my food, even though I was dead tired, even though I could pick up food the next day at the DFAC, it wasn't nutritionally sound for me, but I could do it, may help me taking that hard right over the easy wrong, instilled in me other areas of discipline that applied to the rest of my life. So those simple habits, the making of people, this is so trite and cliche, make your bed every day. Make your bed every day. You know, make those habits. Don't take shortcuts. When you're tempted to make a shortcut, and I've done this, stand there and actually consider, like taking the shortcut, what am I really going to benefit from it? Will doing the right thing the right way benefit me more and maintain the discipline I have in other areas? And the answer to that question is true. That you've never met anybody who's successful that doesn't have habits and is disciplined about their habits, almost to a point of, you know, of OCD, right? In some cases.
You talked about, I love the statement you made about life being fair. It's something that we say on this show, we say to each other all the time, is that fair is where you buy hot dogs and judge the county pig.
Absolutely right.
You know,
I might steal that.
It's life, and you know, fair is where you buy cotton candy. So I like I really love the idea. Let me give a real quick station identification. Again, this is station identification. This is WMUL 88.1 FM, and you are listening to Brother with Dr. Nate Chavin and Dr. Keelan Hinton, and we have Mr. Mike Blanco here, who is a former veteran. He is a business consultant, and he is here as a part of our series on greatness. So I like what you said about I just drew a blank about
life isn't fair.
Oh yeah, just about life fair being fair, and how we learn about ourselves through those adversities, and something that we talk about and we want to get your perspective on, and something that we ask all, how important is adversity to finding yourself, to finding who you are, to finding what we can do? And is adversity necessary to push us to greatness? Like, do all people who achieve something, does it seem like they all have to go through something to dig deep to find who they really are deep down?
I would argue absolutely. You know, adversity comes in many forms. I don't care what your background is. I don't care what your last name is. I don't care how many zeros you have in your bank account. All of that is irrelevant. Everybody will face adversity, I don't care who you are, in some capacity. So great people whether they were naturally born with talent that allowed them to excel, face adversity as well. Because for example, using an example of a professional athlete who has a tremendous relationship with his parents, who then tragically die in a car accident, he's left with a choice of how that adversity is going to affect his talent in the future. Is he going to internalize that in a negative way? Is he going to internalize that in a positive way and live for his family that is no longer with him? Everybody faces adversity. And to your point, we cannot know anything about ourselves or what we're capable of until we face those adversities. Now, I'm not talking so much of, in that example, of life adversities, but I'm talking about challenges that we bring upon ourselves, those things that seem a bridge too far. Right. For me, it was losing 170 pounds going to the Army. Later on in life, it was in my military career. It was, you know, you're not qualified to be a commander in the 82nd Airborne Division. And then when I got to the 82nd Airborne Division, not only was I there, but I won every award that they had.
Yeah.
Just out of spite. And then when I was coming out of the military, people said, hey, you know, Mike, you know, just to manage your expectations, people of your rank coming out of the military can only expect or should only expect to make X amount of dollars in compensation. I was like, who's making these rules? Who? Yeah. Who is this person that is making these rules outside of you? You who didn't want to try in the first place and are now holding me to your self-standard, right? So yes, adversity matters. It's critical. And if you don't experience adversities, you lead a very vanilla life. You know, yeah. I'm not sure that I would trade all the adversity. I would not trade me growing up as a chubby kid for anything in the world, you know, because it brought me and it taught me these lessons. If I would have been born a perfectly fit kid, I don't know that I would have joined the military. I don't know if I would have wanted that challenge in the military. Had I just been happy with what people told me, I don't know if I would have, you know, really gone out of my way to prove myself to get slotted at the 82nd Airborne Division. People told me, you know, Mike, you don't have any consulting experience per se. How are you going to go into consulting? How are you going to go into financial services? And these are challenges that you need to bring upon yourself to see if you can actually do it. Now, was I successful in everything I did? Absolutely not. But one of the problems, I think, and I took those failures hard, and I think it's important to take failures hard. And some people will disagree with me on this, and that's fine. But in society today, it feels like we have almost normalized failure. We have gotten to a point where it's okay to fail as long as you tried. And then we come up with cool buzzwords like fail forward. You should be absolutely terrified to fail. Right? You should be horribly terrified to fail. Who's going to pay the rent? Who's going to feed the kids? What if this fails? What if I fail at this? What's my backup? You should be 100% afraid to fail, but that shouldn't stop you from doing what it is you need to do to conquer that fear and be successful. Courage is, you know, being afraid but acting anyway. Right. Yeah. So we've normalized failure. We've normalized, like, you know, it's okay to go out there to fail. Don't be afraid of it, man. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that, because that kind of takes away the glory and the victory from conquering your fear and being successful and not failing at something.
Yeah.
That's my personal perspective on it. And I'm sure there would be people out there like, you know, I would disagree with that, but it's not to say be so afraid to fail that you don't try. I am saying be afraid to fail. And if you fail, it will hurt, and internalize that and figure out the next way forward. But to sit there and say, oh, you know what, I failed, I'm just going to throw my hands up in the air, I feel great about it, I don't think is a healthy attitude.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting perspective. I think there's parts that I agree with and parts that I maybe have differences with. But I think the part that I can hold on to is that people have to face failure in order to be successful. I like the example you use about getting into a fight, you know, and, you know, I'm not generally someone who will get into fights, you know, I've been in fights before, but, you know, if you're ever in a fight, you know, there's a chance that you could lose that fight, but you still get into it for whatever reason. And the whole point is that you're willing to take the chance of losing. But the thing is, I think what happens for a number of people, at least people that I experience, And for this sake, it might be students that want to excel, that they get petrified by failure. Literally, like that is what happens. They get so afraid of failure that they think about it too much that they can't even operate. So I think sometimes when people are talking about not being afraid of failure, the whole point is, can you absorb failure and learn from it? If you're too petrified, you're going to be like the deer in the headlight and you're not going to move and you won't be able to move forward. But if you have a different way to perceive it, which I think is where we agree, like, yes, I can fail, and when I fail, I can learn from it, but I'm not going to fail and just do nothing. The other thing is, the person who's afraid won't try at all and won't think they're not failing, but they are failing because they're stuck.
Yeah.
Correct. One of my favorite sayings was used by a first sergeant of mine, first sergeant Richard Flanagan, is that don't be so afraid to fail that you forget how to win.
Wow. Yeah. That's good stuff.
I've used that quote number of times. I used to use it on my old podcast. I've used it at speaking engagements, and I think it really resonates. Don't be so afraid to fail that you forget how to win.
That's awesome. You gave so many good points. Something else that I think is key that I don't know if anybody's touched on yet, all these speakers that we've had, and that is the idea of putting yourself in uncomfortable positions.
Oh, absolutely.
In order to grow, if you stay stagnant and you're not challenging yourself, what are you really doing?
Right. Absolutely. And that's not to say that you have to, you know, challenge yourself every single capacity. You know, I am a big fan of David Goggins to an extent, but his big thing is like, who's going to carry my boats, right?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to carry your boat, bro. I am trying to, you know, grow my bank account or build a business or do things like that. I understand the idea behind it. But challenging yourself in ways that help you get to your goal is what's critical, right? And or your personal goals or your relationship goals or whatever. But when you do challenge yourself, there should be a reason behind it. Am I going to learn something about myself? Am I going to get closer to a goal I have, whether it's professional, personal, in a relationship? Or am I waking up at 4 a.m. just because, you know, my Instagram person wakes up at 4 a.m.? Because it may or may not be necessary for you to achieve your goals, and that might not be a challenge that's beneficial for you. And to a point that we discussed earlier, and I think it was Dr. Chapman, one of the things that I learned going through discipline, I think Dr. Chapman, what it was that you said was, you know, making a decision, going with it, and overcoming obstacles and being persistent and determined in achieving it. What I learned a couple of years ago, actually, when I was out of the military, is because I had that exact same concept in my mind. I realized that in some aspects, in certain things I had taken on and put on my plate, that was actually a detriment because I had agreed to do something, because I had fixated on doing something, I was determined to do it at all costs, and I never stopped to assess when it got difficult if it was worth it. I had a failure of doing a cost-benefit analysis when I reached certain gates or when I encountered certain problems. Instead, what I latched onto, like a pit bull with a ball, was I said I was going to do this. I am going to do this. Instead of sitting there, was like, I said I was going to do this. I am going to do this. Is this still beneficial to me in the way that I thought it would be when this journey first started?
Yeah.
And that is something I've learned recently in the last couple of years that I personally need to take better stock of and work on myself. Because at some point, some journeys that we undertake reach their conclusion before the end for a good reason.
Right. I think that is a valid point that I just want to highlight for a second, because I think it's really important for the listeners to get. The concept of having a single-minded focus is really going to have its benefit when you have your ladder on the right building.
Correct.
So if you don't have your ladder on the right building and you are just determined, like you say, like a dog after a bone to get up that building, when you get up to the top, if you haven't counted the costs, one thing that's unfortunate is you might be on the wrong building. And I think the other thing is people there's the whole philosophy of don't quit, right? And right. what I say to people is, well, don't quit if you're on the right path. I never say to people don't quit, because sometimes walking away from one thing that you're involved in might be the right decision. So just the whole idea of never quit anything. And some people live with that. Their father told them that, somebody they respect told them that. So this is when they say, okay, well, you know what? I said I was going to do this. I'll give you some examples. Someone might say, well, you know what I want to do is I think this is going to be the right thing to do to make me profitable, not necessarily for my big purpose in life, but just because I think society says I should do it. I'm going to, you know, get a house. And they may start that process and go down that process and figure, I got to stay with this until it works. But there's other things. The market, how's the market doing right now? There's how much it's going to cost for you to maintain that. There's all these things that where if you don't have it right now, it's not going to be so bad of an idea. But you are stuck on it because you believe once I start down a path, I cannot quit it. Because what are other people going to think?
Correct.
Yeah.
So I think it's a very good, important point for people to think. And I wonder on that if you could speak to goals for you, how important goals have been, and then the reassessment. One thing is setting the goal, but then reassessing it also.
So I will be completely transparent and honest with you. The latter part, the assessing of the goals once there or en route, I have struggled with. Most of my life up until recently, going back to, you know, really taking stock of the journey I'm on and if it's worth it, in reaching whatever other goal I have beyond it. What I have done for most of my life is I never saw any of my accomplishments as accomplishments, right? I never saw any of them as an accomplishment. I saw them as stepping stones to getting to where it was I wanted to be. Right. These were means to an end. The physical fitness, the military training, the schools, the scholastics, the academics, the competitive nature, the competitive spirit, because I would go out and, you know, just try and crush my competition. It wasn't good enough to win. I had to win by a lot. And what I realized years later was I never had an end state. I didn't know what that end goal was. I had all of these goals and I kept hitting them, but I never knew when I had reached, you know, future state success. And I constantly lived in current state success. And so it wasn't until recently that that can be tragic. One that's tragic because you're not appreciating your own hard work and all the things you've accomplished, right? Like, I went to airborne school. People were like, oh, congratulations, you know, for learning to jump out. I was like, that's not a big deal. You know, wait till you see what I do next. And then I would go do whatever that big next thing was. I was like, wait till you see what I do next. That wasn't all that important. It stops you from really appreciating all the things that you've done. It prevents you from honing in and focusing on what your future state should be or what you want it to be and what the things that you actually need to do to get to that future state. And instead, what people do is they take on all of these subtasks and all of these goals, these shotgun goals, because they think that these are going to be all of those things that get me to that, to get me to wherever it is I want to be without actually defining what that place was. But to your initial question of how important goals are to me, I've never been somebody who sat there and, you know, wrote a goal down or wrote it on a board. I saw what I saw instinctively and intuitively, like, that is where I want to be. That is what I want, whether it be a job. And goals change over the years. People's idea of success changes over the years. People's idea of greatness, people's idea of what people they consider great change over the years, right? So what the person that you consider great as a young man might not be the same person that you consider great in your 40s and 50s, right? And it was the same. It's the same for goal setting. Literally just look to the horizon. I was like, this is where I need to go. And then I backwards plan from there what it is I need to achieve. But you cannot do that without habits. A lot of times, and people go through this, you know, they might go out at night or maybe they have a couple of drinks and they say they have this recurring idea in their head. I'm going to start this business. I keep talking about starting this business. And then what happens? They go to sleep, they wake up, and for whatever reason, the drive and motivation that was there three bourbons in last night is no longer there in the morning. And we will look forward to having that same conversation after three bourbons in 2 weeks when you're out with your friends, right? So it's having the discipline to recognize opportunities when they happen and the courage to action on those opportunities that you have. But a lot of times people just don't do it because they lack the discipline or they lack the ability to action on those items because they don't actually think that they can do it, which is really tragic.
Yeah, I think that's the part of that point is we lack the courage. You know, it's like a good idea, but like, I don't know if it would actually work. And I think the other tragic part about that is sometimes what happens is that person who's thinking about this great idea, and a few months they see somebody else do it and killing it. Like,
yeah.
Like, I could have done that.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, but no journey is easy though, right? I mean, everybody like Gary V and all these other guys, you know, it's some of their journeys were easier than others, but we don't talk about the sleepless nights. We don't talk about the hard work. We don't talk about the bills that didn't get paid. You know, Jeff Bezos wrote his business plan for Amazon in a car cross country on his way to his first investor pitch while his wife drove, right? We don't talk about those things. And so people have to be prepared for those things and have the discipline to see them through if they're serious about whatever idea or opportunity it is. Because let's be honest, most times people aren't that serious about whatever their idea is, even if it is actually a good and actionable idea.
Right. I think one thing that you've brought up that we haven't heard from the other speakers, the way that you're presenting it, is this whole idea of sacrifice. And, you know, there's a saying that I have that I feel like I've been saying a lot more lately is basically you got to pay somewhere. So the whole idea is like, you're going to put in the work now or you haven't put in the work later and you do this for somebody else. And when we think about people across the spectrum of greatness, obviously everybody has their different definitions. But somebody that has done something monumental, there has been other parts of their life that sacrifice had to be made, and people in their unit knew that and were willing to make that payment, you know?
Right. Right. I agree. You know, one of my favorite stories of a great man I once met, and you know, greatness exists in at different echelons of our you know, spheres of influence, right? They exist in our periphery. They exist for us at the individual level, at both the macro and micro level. The micro level being your family of great people and people that you meet, and then that the greater macro being those celebrities or whomever that you may or may not know that you look up to as great. One of them was a man I knew named Zachy, who I met at Fort Polk, Louisiana. And not to belabor the point, but when the Taliban came into power in the 90s, he was married, had a couple of small children, and they were living in Kandahar. Knowing what was about to happen and seeing what was going on in the streets and how, you know, the Russians had just left. Now there was this power struggle there. There was sectarian violence. He walked from Kandahar to the Ukraine, took his family, and he walked from Kandahar, Afghanistan to the Ukraine. While in the Ukraine, he applied for asylum. He went to university there. And then he eventually applied for asylum in the United States. The United States flew him out to sunny California. He started a business there. Went back to school, earned a master's degree in electrical engineering, and sold his company. And now he teaches inner city kids math.
Wow.
That is greatness. You know, that is a great man by any account. And it was a privilege to meet him. But I guess what I'm trying to say here is greatness exists at all levels and is subjective. I've had the benefit of meeting some amazing and great people throughout my travels, throughout my work, clearly throughout my military career. And it's really just incredible what people are capable of doing. But to your point, Dr. Chapman, you know, there is sacrifice, right? Absolutely. So Zach sacrificed his homeland. He left behind brothers and aunts and his parents. He made a trek with two newborn babies to across the Afghanistan terrain into Ukraine, not knowing what he was going to find there. Like, that is a lot of sacrifice. And to be perfectly honest with you, that's a level of sacrifice that most people in this country don't have to go. Like, none of us have to, you know, walk 4,000 miles to do much. So it's really incredible the sacrifices people are willing to make to do great things. But in Zach's case, he wasn't trying to be a great man. He found greatness in his journey by doing what he had to do. But he was just a man trying to survive, and that's how he found greatness.
Yeah, and that's an awesome point, I think, for our listeners to catch on to that might be on their journey where they're at. You know, I remember when I was in high school, my parents work a lot, so I would have to walk home from basketball practice, and, you know, it was a good walk. I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 miles. And when I was making this walk in the winter, you know, it wasn't sunny California, I was hating life. I was like, man, this sucks. You know, this is horrible, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I knew what was going on with my parents. But I say that to say, you know, sometimes you're in situations, whether it's that small situation or other situations, where you don't see where that particular discipline or something you had to do is going to come into benefit later on in life. You know, rather it's where you're going through that ruck march as a military soldier, hating life, holding the 7-pound weapon and the ruck match, or whatever it is. Sometimes those adversities where you have to make the sacrifice, which at the time might not be something you wanted to do, can show up in a different way in a discipline that help you get to the next step.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
We're coming up on time. Real quick, another question that we always have to ask is related to narcissism. Now, we've tweaked this word. We've played with it. And we prefer Dr. Chapman's word of ego strength.
Ego strength.
Ego strength. So we always ask, does it take a certain level of to achieve greatness? As in, does it take a little bit of narcissism and a lot of ego strength to believe that you can be the one? Like, do you have to some degree, those who are great have just a touch of narcissism to believe that you can be the one to do the thing that they say not many people do? Is it necessary?
I think this is such a loaded question.
Ego strength.
So to be an ego strength lifter, I don't know that that is completely required. I think in some situations, some people have, you know, and let's be honest with ourselves, right? Just because somebody achieves success doesn't make them great, right? Depends on really how you want to define greatness.
Throw in there how you define greatness.
Oof. So, you know, John Maxwell would, you know, what it is we instill in others and what it is we do for society and how we're able to influence others. I personally would, I think the term greatness is subjective. For me, it's how much influence you can have, to what degree, across how many people, in what capacity, through what medium, right? So is the greatness we're talking about financial freedom and wealth? Is the greatness we're talking about the ability to influence, you know, relationships, love, to facilitate, you know, honest and productive political discourse? Right. So there's different ways to look at it. Some people that are considered great, you know, by my definition, wouldn't make that cut. But to answer the initial question, I think that a level of confidence that may border on your ego strength is 100% required. And I think sometimes that's developed over time. In my case, I wasn't a very, you know, I didn't have much of a big ego. I was not confident. I eventually would grow an ego, much to my dismay. And eventually, you know, I had a battalion commander. I said, you know, one day, Mike, you're going to eat a big old chunk of humble pie. And he wasn't lying. And I did that. And that I no longer was an ego lifter. I was more of a, you know, loud confidence, I would say. But listen, there needs to be, like, I think people that are great eventually realize, you know, it's the same reason why they don't bother to respond directly to trolls on social media or to respond to negativity. Greatness doesn't need an explanation, right? And I think that that are confident, yeah, greatness doesn't need an explanation. I wish I could take credit for saying that originally. I knew it came from somebody much smarter than me. I had to get back down to who that was. But yeah, greatness needs no explanation. I think people hit a stride and a level of confidence in their success and in the subject matter expertise that they've developed that they no longer need to respond to the masses, and they can speak confidently. Now, what makes, in my personal opinion, those people great is if they reach down from their perch and pull people up with them, right? Awesome. Rather than climbing on the broken backs of your people, if you're standing on that top rung of whatever your profession is, whatever your community, maybe it's just your community, it's the reaching down and helping others reach your level is what really makes somebody great, right? By my personal definition. Like, and let's not get it twisted. Like, one of the things I find appealing, and I think this is a bad word in some circles, is one of the things that motivates me is financial freedom and status. That's something I've struggled with to understand about myself, but then I realized I'm not going to deny these things that motivate me. But that's also part of that is another thing that motivates me is helping the veteran community to break those glass ceilings and those Hollywood trappings and stigmas of the broken veteran. Right. And, yeah. And helping them wherever I can bring them to my level. So my motivation of financial freedom and status allows me to also at the same time reach down and help others achieve great things too. And I think that's where the crux and the crossroad is of being honest with yourself of what motivates you. Be honest with yourself. There's nothing wrong with it. That doesn't mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with wanting financial freedom. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be famous for whatever reason, right? What's key is when you start achieving your goals and everything else, don't stand on the shoulders of people. Help them up.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah. Great.
No, that's good. You always ask the last question about who.
I was gonna be the same last question. The ringing is throwing me off a little bit, but what I'm wondering if you would think about a younger Mike or Michelle, and think about the type of advice you would give that person in terms of being the best version of themselves. Based on our experience that you have, right? What would you tell them?
Honestly, even if I could go back in time and have this conversation with my younger self, I don't know that he would believe me. Wow. I don't know that he would believe the things I would have to tell him, right? I don't think he would believe that he could lose weight. I don't think that he would believe that he would go on to earn an MBA or in another master's degree. I don't think he would believe that he would one day be a commander in the 82nd Airborne Division, because quite honestly, he didn't believe in himself. And so I don't know that I think young Mike, myself, needed to go on the journey exactly how he did it to get to where he was today without changing not a thing.
Great, great. But now let's just say, not Mike, somebody else who's like, you know what, I'm listening to this podcast and I'm trying to get these jewels. What would you say to them?
Get your hand out of the Cheeto bag and go for a run.
Oh, that's funny because I just finished a whole bag of Cheetos.
Oh, there you go. Oh, man. Oh, real quick before we go, just give us a couple of people of who would you consider to be great? We always ask that last question before we get out of here. Just a couple of people that you would consider to be great.
Right. So off the bat, somebody that people would most likely recognize is like I said it earlier, Colin Powell. Yeah. I've been a huge fan of his since, you know, Desert Storm. I've read his book, My American Journey. three or four times. Every time an abridged version came out, I would read it again. I really urge anybody who's interested in greatness and leadership in general to read the book. In there, they also have, you know, Colin Powell's 13 Rules of Leadership, which is, you know, one of my favorites, I think, is number 10, which is be patient and be kind, right? Which is I think, imperative. Other people that I've met in my life would be Colonel McGahey, who really took me under his wing and showed me what it was to be a military leader. You know, in society, we think people with passion, people who you know, get a little hot are, you know, bad leaders or they're angry leaders. No, they're passionate people, especially when they know exactly what it is they're talking about. And this man was great because he would do what others would not. If people told him no, he would go get the answer himself, which is not something that you typically see of a person that's commanding an organization of 5,000, right? Other people tell you no, you're going to find somebody else to tell, go figure it out and get yes. He would go get the yes himself. You know, I remember one time there was a problem down at one of the training lanes, and I said, all right, sir, well, I'm going to go down there and take care of it. He's like, well, you better go down there with, I can't remember what piece of equipment he told me. He's like, they don't need another person down there screaming instructions. They need somebody to actually do the work. And so that's what I did. I went down there and I actually did the work. That's what true leaders do. They do the work. They don't tell you how to do the work. Right. So that's another one. Zach, we discussed earlier, the man that walked from Kandahar to the Ukraine, also another great man. And of course I can't talk about greatness without talking about Dwayne Johnson. Like, let's be honest. I don't know. Yeah. That is one great dude. I don't know if he's just running one of the most amazing PR marketing campaigns ever seen in history, but he is just a likable, incredible, good human being.
Good deal. Well, we appreciate you. We appreciate your story. Your advice has been absolutely amazing. We appreciate you giving us your time, your wisdom, because you could have been anywhere tonight, but you decided to hang with us for an hour. And we thank you, because you didn't have to be here. Your story is amazing. Your story is inspiring. And you gave us a lot of really good things to think about. And we wish you peace and blessings on your journey for whatever you put your hands to in the future. We appreciate you, sir.
I appreciate you. Thank you guys for having me.
Thank you. So as we always say again, for those who would like to participate, if you have questions, comments, or suggestions for our guests, you can email them to b2bpsych@gmail.com. That's b2bpsych@gmail.com. And if you have questions for our guests, we will, as best as we can, try to forward it to him, and hopefully maybe he'll try to answer a couple of them if possible. As we always say, we thank Marshall University. We thank WMUL. We thank Dr. Chapman all the way. We have taken the show coast to coast, West Virginia. You know, we got guests in Miami, West Virginia, California, and everybody in between that's listening. We appreciate you so much for continuing to support us. As we always say before we leave, as I always say, graveyards are full of death. Graveyards are full of regret and potential. Okay. Make sure that you are chasing your dreams. Make sure the people that you love know that you love them. Make sure you leave no stone unturned. Make sure everything you want to do, you try. And as I always say, make sure that you are doing something that sets your soul on fire. And always, as always, Dr. Chapman will take us out. And peace and blessings to you all. Thank you for listening.
All right. So today we had Major Retired Michael Blanco gave us some words of wisdom. I'm trying to dissect some things that we can take away. I think the things that stood out for me are a few things. One, is about goals. So it's not just this idea of having goals that you work for or work towards. I think a lot of people that perform in this world have goals. I think everybody has goals, really. Even the person that you think doesn't have a goal at all, the goal may be to do something that we might think is not productive, but they probably still have a goal. But the whole idea is that you have goals that are balanced on a purpose. If you have goals that are balanced on a purpose, you're going to get more out of your goals, and you have to be willing to reassess those goals. He was talking about his journey and how that reassessing piece has become more clear to him now. And if you can do that, you give yourself the freedom to see whether that goal is still important to you. Is it still in line with your purpose? And that'll be easier to do if you actually know what your purpose is before you start. He reminded me of my old Army days when I was going through non-commissioned officer school, the slogan was, the three things that were important was be, no, do. So if you want to be a good leader, keep it in that that mindset of not only being competent, but it being able to lead by example. And that's not just about being a leader. If you happen to be a parent, a mother, a father, a uncle, a auntie, somebody's watching you. And today in our world, somebody's watching you even if you don't have kids, because you're on Instagram, you're on Facebook, somebody's watching you, and somebody may be following your steps. And I know you may not believe that, but I have heard some people that seem to be following some people that I think, well, I don't know if I follow them. So that makes me think everybody has someone following them. So just be mindful of that. I would sum up his philosophy on greatness, but combining it with not my philosophy on greatness, but another phrase I have, I'm just going to tweak it a little bit. So what I heard him say about greatness is not so much about just getting to the top. It's about who you bring to the top with you. So if you want to be great in whatever you do, are you creating avenues? Are you opening doors? Are you creating a place for other people to be at the table? You're not just like, I'm just going to get at the table. Can I bring other people to the table? The last thing I want to say that I think was highlighted in this conversation is being very comfortable with who you are and recognizing the old cliche that war with you is going to be constant and never finishing. And that doesn't necessarily have to be a problem as long as you are ready to continuously go to war with yourself. Sometimes you're going to be on your team, sometimes you're not. As long as you're honest about that and what it is you want out of life, you could probably get there. So peace and blessings. We'll see you all next time.
Merlin, I need your help. The armies of darkness are at Camelot's gate, but Excalibur is destroyed.
Fear not, Arthur, for I have in my hands a weapon far more powerful than the world has ever seen. The pure, sweet song of its blade leaving the sheath is able to pierce the air.